I have a vivid memory as a child of the first time that I experienced an extended separation from my mother. And the occasion was this. My grandfather was very ill, and they thought he was going to die. So my mother took the youngest, the baby, with her and went to Arizona, where she had grown up, to be with him, leaving five older children with my father. I was seven, and I was the third oldest. And my father's response to the situation was to call upon relatives and friends. And so my brothers went to friends in Lake Tahoe. My sister went to an aunt and uncle. And it so happened that at just that moment, there were some friends, family friends, visiting from Mexico City. And they said, let us take the two girls, and we'll have an extended visit. It'll be fun. Now, my father was never one to miss an opportunity for education. And so he said, sure, take them, 3 weeks. I was seven, Mary was eight. I had never been away from my mother for very long at all. And so we left, and I was desolate. I had never experienced that sense of homesickness, that sense of bereavement that came upon me in not only this new place, but this new culture, this new country, this new language, everything. And in retrospect, I can see what I did to cope. I began to bring my mother, my sense of who my mother was, into almost everything I did. And one of the things that my mother used to do was to go to daily mass, and if I was lucky enough to wake up early enough, I could always go with her. And that was a special time. It was a time when I had her to myself. With many children, that was a rare occasion. And it was a time when we were together with God, and that was sacred and special. And so I decided that I would go to daily mass, and I talked my sister into it. I had noticed a church as we had approached the house just a few blocks away across a busy thoroughfare. So the very first morning that we were there, I got up very early, woke Mary, said, let's go, and off we went, and we slipped out the door. Well, an hour later, when we came back, the house was in an uproar, and our host family was absolutely terrified that we had been kidnapped. And they said to us, don't you know that that happens here? You can't do that. You have to go out with a chaperone. Never, never, ever do that again. I could have had a clue if I had noticed that surrounding the house was this huge stone wall with jagged rocks, jagged glass embedded in the top of it to discourage people from coming over and those of us from going out. And then big, heavy doors with locks on them. And it is true that in those days, and even today, kidnappings were not unusual. So I had to change my strategy. Well, I noticed that every night around dinner time, there was a ritual in that family. It was a very wealthy family. This father was a very prominent criminal attorney in Mexico City. And they had six children of their own and were expecting their seventh. So they had a ritual that every night they would unlock the back gate. And the beggars in the city knew about this. And they would come and line up. And the cook would take the leftover dinner and put it in little tin cans that had been used and pass it out. And I knew that my mother always was there with a willing hand to anyone in need. Those who would come to the door, those whom she would pass on the street, whatever. And I thought, I want to do that. So I went into the kitchen and I talked to the cook, who spoke only Spanish. But somehow I communicated. And she was amazed that a child of the household would want to do something like that. But I insisted. And so she said yes. And actually she was glad to give the responsibility away. And every night I would go and I would take these little tin cans and I would hand them out to the beggars. And my heart just expanded. And I wept for them internally. I had had no experience of that kind of poverty growing up in San Francisco in a well-to-do family. So I brought my mother with me as much as I could. And I still missed her, but I was coping until this one day when I thought that I would never, ever see her again. My host father had decided that he would take the family on an outing into the mountains. And on the way, he was going to stop and interrogate a witness in one of his cases. And so we drove a good piece, and we arrived at this, what turned out to be, a very poor village, an Indian village. And we got out of the car, went into this, I can only describe it as a hut. It had a dirt floor. The babies were there. They were naked, running around. The mother was grinding corn on a stone, preparing to make tortillas. Now, we had been a while in the car, and I really needed a bathroom. And so I asked, and all of a sudden, there was this huge consternation that arose in that little abode in Spanish. And I didn't know what the problem was. And then I suddenly realized that there was no bathroom in that house. So they were trying to figure out a strategy for me, and one that wouldn't be too horrifying. And so finally, my host mother said to me, "Helen, you're going to have to go across the way and into the cornfield." So I was fine with that. I just wanted to take care of it. And so off I went. And I get to the cornfield, and in modesty, I went a fair piece inside of the cornfield. And when I was ready to come back, all of a sudden, I looked around, and all I saw were these corn stalks, which were a lot higher than I was. And I had no idea what the direction was. And I'm not known even to this day for my sense of direction. And I experienced in that moment that sense of, I'm lost, I will never, ever see my mother again. And I thrashed around, and I felt just the sensations that were physical in my body, and I just, in a panic, went this way and that way and this way and that way, and finally, I came out. And I saw the little house in the distance. I was so relieved, and I ran through an irrigation ditch, got myself all dirty, but came back. I didn't even care. Now, that memory is so vivid. And it's that human sense of separation from the one who loves us the most. And I think that that is what the soul feels in regard to Divine Mother. That yearning, that sense of wanting to be close, and that sense of not being there when we're out of tune with Divine Mother. But this reading tells us that that's not the case. That God not only created the universe, God became the universe. That He is part of us and we are part of Him. And so that sense of separation is a false sense. It's something that we have to put aside. Not an easy thing to do. But we have to remember from whence we came, because we are all sparks of the divine. And it is right there within us, our truest, deepest reality. Now, in our culture, in Western culture, there is not the sense of original goodness from whence we come, but rather a sense of original sin. I mean, that is the lore, that is the scripture, rooted in the story of Adam and Eve, who, when they ate of the forbidden fruit out of egoic desire, lost their garden privileges and were expelled from the sight of God, and then took on themselves all of those human attributes of illness and old age and death. And those are the stories that I grew up with and that are infused in the literature and in the very culture, in the very air we breathe here. So many, many years ago, when I came to Ananda, I came out of a sense of futility and desperation, really. I was at that point in my life. And when I came to Ananda and I discovered another way of looking at things and immersed myself in Master's teachings and Swami's teaching and understood that we come from a sense of possibility and life has meaning, it changed everything for me. Absolutely everything. From the very first moment that I stepped on Ananda ground, I felt the vibration of joy and bliss. And I began to tune into that because it's a natural thing. It's who we really are. We really are that joy and that bliss that we seek in all kinds of other things, all those false desires that keep us going. And yet we're that already, if we could but remember it. And I was struck recently by a letter that was shared with us, a letter Master wrote to a devotee who was obviously suffering over some misdeed that they had done. And Master's response to that devotee was to say, put that aside. Don't think about that as who you are. Don't define yourself in terms of those negatives. You are a shining soul of God. And he was addressing that notion of original goodness, that we're all shining souls and we're all sparks of the divine. And to the extent that we don't believe that, we suffer from feelings of worthlessness, from feelings of deprivation, from feelings of alienation, from that which is right there for the getting. Now, I'll share a story with you about Swami that I think speaks to this. Many years ago, I was living at the village, and Swami had satsangs in those days, and we would all go to Crystal Hermitage. Now, my children were in the school up there, the Living Wisdom School up there, and that particular evening, they were holding a potato bar to raise funds for some field trip. And I was in charge of announcing that and urging everybody at the satsang to come down to the market after the satsang and the meditation and support the potato bar. So knowing that I was going to make this announcement, I sat myself right at Swami's feet. Not usually a thing that I did. And I didn't have a pillow. I was very uncomfortable. But I was, when the meditation came around, determined, because I was just so close to him, I mean, he was right there. I was determined that I was going to take advantage of this and by my will overcome my bodily discomfort. Now, the meditation was a half an hour. That was a long time at that time for me. But I persevered, and eventually I kind of settled in. And then when it was over and Swami was saying goodbye to everybody, I leaned over and I said to him, Swamiji, may I make an announcement? And he said, of course. So I stood up and I looked out, just as I'm looking out at all of you, and I began to talk about this potato bar and how if they just went, there were going to be great potatoes and salad and, you know, cheese and all the trimmings and broccoli. And as I am speaking, I am becoming aware that all of my devotee friends are bathed in this golden light, and that the light connects them all, and that I'm connected. And in my heart, I felt this sense of overwhelming joy just rise up. I could barely speak. And I got through it somehow. And then Swami just leaned over and he just took me and grabbed me and pulled me in and held me for a moment. And he knew. He knew what I had seen. Because I think that what I had seen was a glimpse of what he sees, which is us, the shining soul part, the divine spark part. And that's what he relates to. And that's why even when he scolds us, and I mean, when I've been scolded by Swami, it's not fun. But underneath it all, there's just this wonderful, wonderful sense of affirmation of our divinity within that is going to be the hope and is the hope for all of us. And it's this original goodness, the spark of the divine that we try as teachers in our school, where I teach, where Gary teaches, that we try to bring into the lives of our children. It was Friday night that we returned from our expedition, our annual expedition, up to the old meditation retreat now known as the Living, the Ananda Institute of Alternative Living and Meditation Retreat. It's a mouthful, but it's worth mastering because this place is a gem. Absolutely a gem. And every year, under Gary's guidance and inspiration, we take these 11, 12, and 13-year-old boys and girls up there for a week retreat. And sometimes people hear that and they say, are you crazy? And when we first thought about it, we wondered ourselves if we were crazy. But over the years, what has happened has been the same thing that happens to anybody who goes within in deep inner communion, in silence, in attunement with the very vibrations of a holy place, and offers themselves up as vessels and receptacles of divine grace. Well, that's the highfalutin language. The real language, the daily language, is that the kids went up there and they ate breakfast in silence with all the other retreat guests, and they went on walks and hikes, and they read, and they unplugged from TV and computers, and for the most part cell phones, and they had no sugar snacks, and they integrated with the high school students who live up there, and the teachers who live up there, and the staff, and they ate vegetarian food, and they slowed down. And what happened was extraordinary. It's as clear as the ride up in the van and the car and the ride back. Up, the decibel level is high, the frenetic energy is high, the energy is perhaps not quite as sattvic. And then going back, there was this calm that settled in, this harmony, this sense of receptivity, the sense of beauty. I was playing one of Swami's tapes, and Joy in the back seat said, Helen, whose music is that? That's so beautiful. And it was Greenfield's. And she said, we should have that in our play. And I looked the last day, we were packing. Now envision 11 children packing, trying to get out and clean up. And there was absolute harmony. Two girls were rolling up a sleeping bag that belonged to another girl because she was helping a fourth girl try to find her lost glasses. And everything was done in perfect synchronism. I never had to lay down the law. I never had to tell them to go to bed. I never had to do a lot of the things that we automatically associate with young children. And these are typical kids. We did have the occasion of the rock that was aimed and missed its mark and went through the sliding glass door. I mean, that happened. And it's important that that happened because it gave us an opportunity to see the original goodness in that child. Now, when children are put in that situation, there is an affirmation that takes place that is transformative at the deepest level and that takes them back. They'll never forget that. We gave them the option of saying, maybe not going this year. They said, oh no, that's the best field trip of the year. And the other field trips are pretty snazzy. You know, it's canoe trips and backpacking trips. But no, they would not give up the meditation retreat because children, all of us, what we seek really is that union with the Divine Mother. And when we get just a little sniff of it, that's enough. And we want more and more and more. And our challenge is to give ourselves the opportunity to experience just that little bit that will carry us further and further and further into the depths of our own divine beings. So this is a commercial. for the Ananda Institute of Alternative Living, if you want to engage for a little while in deep silence and communion with God on holy, holy ground, that's where Swami started Ananda, then you should go. Charming cabins, beautiful food, wonderful people. As St. Augustine said, you know, our hearts will be restless until they find their rest in thee. And so I exhort all of us to follow his advice. Let us find our rest in Divine Mother.